is the Rancho Marietta Community Services District Special Meeting of the Improvements Committee for September 18th. And we are called to order. Our first, second item on the agenda is closed session regarding appointment of Director of Operations. So we will move into closed session, and we have an ETA on when we'll be back?
We'll be back probably by 9:05. Yeah.
9:05, not just 9, 9:05.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move into closed session. So we are coming out of the closed session. Under closed session, we discussed the appointment of the Director of Operations. No actions were taken. Moved back into open session, and the improvement staff report. Travis.
Thank you, sir. For item A, the Village Connection district service line versus the private line. There's been a discussion on who owns the water lines at the village. Discrepancy is where does CSD responsibility end and the homeowner's responsibility begin. There was a letter sent by Michael Fritchie to village management denoting the district water code that outlines the responsibility of the district and the homeowner. That letter is included in the packet. Just for a little history, this all came about. There was a homeowner that had a water leak at his house, and it was actually water line under his mobile home. And for staff to be able to get in that, they had to actually crawl through a crawl space in his mobile home under the house. And it was the utility staff called and spoke with Michael because there were safety concerns, because you couldn't get around. You're under a mobile home. Michael came out, took a look at it, and deemed that that was a safety issue, because you know there was no way to get in there and make a repair safely for us to do it. Michael had spoke with the homeowner, and they ended up having a plumber come out and do the repair, however they did it, and that's what started this. That's what started this thing about where water lines are, where our responsibility ends and where the homeowners begin. Continue.
I have no question.
I do have a public comment.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. Do you want to take them as we go, or at the end of his whole report?
Let's take them as we go.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Mr. Cole.
No, go ahead.
Very good. Matt.
Hi. Rob McLeod. Used to be utility supervisor for Rancho Marietta 10 years ago, going off 11. The issue I see with what Michael Fritchie wrote is that he says that it's a single issue with a single house, while there are multiple houses on the same water line. So it's not just that house. It's every house that might be tiny, might be four homes. I myself have made repairs under there, under homes. Several times. Not that big of a deal. You get a little wet, get a little muddy, but you make the repair. And you turn the water off and make the repair. But the issue I'm having is that the code that Michael brought up is for a single home. It's not for multiple homes on a line. That's still considered a water main. So I don't care if that pipe is three quarters of an inch. There's multiple homes on it. It's a water main. That's how I am.
Good. Thank you.
So, to continue a little bit, that what I spoke about earlier was the start of this whole, and then we had a resident that had a break in a line that he had said had been repaired before. Michael had made the decision based on the letter that was written to her name was Miss Lennox, wrote a letter to her stating the position of the district. I do not know how far it went on the conversation, and apparently she retired shortly after that. And so the district went, Michael felt, because of the interpretation of the water code that the district has, that the responsibility for the repair was the homeowner's responsibility. And that was the gentleman that came to the board meeting, I think last time, talking about that it should have been our responsibility. So I don't know which direction the district's going to go, if we're going to do a hard line denote of what's ours, what's theirs over at the mobile home park. But I know that Michael had made up, a schematic and highlighted where he feels, based on his interpretation of where our responsibility ends and where the homeowner's begins.
Is this it?
No, there was a, I'll have to.
I don't have it.
It's like a GIS map that shows the lines of the pipes.
Yeah.
Travis, can I just ask a clarifying question? So was the letter to Ms. Lennox from November of 23, was that prompted by the same leak that the homeowner came to the board with?
No.
Differently.
Differently. This it was prompted by the leak under the house, or under the mobile home, where the interpretation of, I think, one of the and Mac may disagree with me, and that's fine, but the water code in their state, something to the effect of that water lines cannot be covered up, or getting to the line be encumbered by trees, bushes, a mobile home, stuff like that. And I think that's kind of where this started on that.
And I think there was also a CIP project that was proposed about 5 or 6 years ago to address the layout of the water supply pipes that is old, and that led to the placement of homes on top of some of those connections, which is, I think, the heart of the problem here. So we could come back at another meeting with more information about that and talk about options there.
My recollection is that we were ready to do that, and we were going to do it in conjunction with the village's repaving operation or paving operation or something, and then they never did that, so we never moved the line.
Does that ring a bell, Travis?
The only thing that that I'm aware of is I know that I think it was longer than 4 or 5 years ago, the district had plans to actually abandon all the old piping that were under the mobile homes and put the piping out in the street. And if I recall a conversation with Paul about that, and Mac may know more, I think the cost
It was going to be several million dollars, and I think that it was whether it was deemed too expensive or it just got maybe kicked down the road, but it never came to fruition. And so I'm going to presume that if we were to try to do that job now, it would be a lot more than a couple of million dollars.
Well, the way it should have been done is not the way it happened. What I mean is that they redesigned the park because somebody was upset it looked like a military barracks situation. So when they designed the little parks and stuff, the houses ended up on water, sewer, telephone, gas. You know, it's not the residents' fault that they were put in. It was put in by operating engineers. And in fact, that's what that established for, was for the operating engineers. And I don't think the residents over there, you know, they're all seniors, should have to worry about water breaks. And if I was still working for the district, I would be pushing to put in the new water line. You don't have to do them all at once. Pick a street. A lot of the water mains, the larger water mains, 4-inch, 10-inch, and it would be easy to do. I could do it. Find the main, cut into the main, put a valve in, run a new line in, loop it back around, put another valve in. It's not that big a deal, other than shutting the water off for a few hours. Cutting in a water line is nothing.
Right. It's coming back to me, the conversations that were had, and it was about trenching through the streets and who was going to repair the streets and was it going to be slurried after to get rid of the trench lines and all of those things came into it. What I would like to do is, you know, what kind of what Mimi said, I would like to see the diagram that Michael came up with.
Okay.
And get a little history on that project, CIP project, that was never done. And I like your idea of maybe just doing a section at a time to get it into... You're right. The water mains shouldn't be where they're at. They should be in the middle of the street. And well, if we can do that, if we can break it into smaller projects that we can do economically.
Well, trenching across the street, that's not a big deal. We put, you know, cut back in there, trench it, cut, put the valve in. But where you have like a park and a park separated, okay, you got one water line going underneath these mobiles, and you got another water line going underneath these mobiles. If you move them over, abandon that system, put a line in and loop it back into the main, which is supposed to be a loop system.
Right.
And then run your water lines over to the back of the houses.
Yeah. Yeah. But we need to do some more work on this, and we'll figure out something right. We need to do the right thing. He's right. It's not their fault that their lines ended up underneath their homes. So, Martin,
is there a similar problem with sewer?
Yes.
Yes.
So you'd tackle them both at the same time if you did it that way.
That would be, I think that might be, I mean, if we're going to do it a section at a time, then yeah, it might be appropriate to do that. Mm-hmm. Because why dig twice if you don't have to?
Well,
but a lot of it depends on the location, because the water and sewer lines have at least a 6-foot spacing in between them. So a lot of it would depend on where they're actually located and how big of a footprint would take to do that at the same time.
And let's see what was in the original CIP project too, whether it was just water or sewer or both.
I'll send that to you and Marty.
I think you've got a follow-up comment.
Yeah, follow-up on the sewer. The only problems over there with the sewer, there aren't any cleanouts. Okay? So you got a 4-inch sewer lateral going under these homes, and there's no cleanout. There's no end-of-the-line cleanout. So if there's a problem with a house in the middle of four houses, you know, say it's the second or third house, it's affecting everybody downstream. So if you cut in a, find the end of that sewer and put a clean out there, then you can get in there and get it, flush it, whatever you need to do. The problem is that they were never installed. They were never required to be installed. So these homes over there, I put one on a mobile over there. It's my mobile. I put one in over there. Just for me.
Sure.
So it's not a bad, it's not a hard deal. And I don't think the district should be responsible for that. I think the homeowner should put one in for their own safeguard. There's two on every other house out here on the north and south.
Right. Thank you. Appreciate that.
I agree with Randy that we need to get a better perspective of what we're dealing with. It also seems like we need some sort of direction of what we're going to do with the next one that shows up. Do we have a policy or not a policy, or at least in the interim, until we get them put back together?
Yeah.
Because it's not fair to the people that live out there that don't know the rules or don't know our rules, or should be published somehow.
Yeah, I think the repair that was brought to the board just in the last couple of months, which came to staff in May, June, was like $1,500, essentially, which mm-hmm. is far less than a couple million, you know.
The board could decide on what the policy wants to be and work toward a final resolution of the piping.
I totally agree. But, yeah, you're right. It has to be a board decision on a policy. What happens with the next break in a multi, where in a section of pipe that then breaks into
multiple connections.
Yeah.
And this is an item for discussion on tonight's board agenda.
Okay. Good. Riverview infrastructure.
So the warranty, the 1-year warranty for the infrastructure for phase 1A and 1B has expired. And so they are just asking for the release of the warranty, and so that they can do what they have to do to get a release for their of their bonds and stuff. So I wrote up, we had letters written up for both of them, and they are in the packet. If they're agreeable, then we could have Mimi's signature on them, and
this one we actually consulted with council, and council advised us that the GM has the authority to sign these, and so we pulled it from the tonight's agenda, and then just missed it on this one. So I can sign these. Travis has confirmed that they took care of everything they were supposed to take care of in phase 1A and B, and that we can release them from this. This has a financial implication for them, as they have a bond for that warranty period. So, but staff can handle this. So we'll be okay going forward on that.
And did we do a final inspection and come up with a final punch list, or we just?
No, they did a final. Ron and Joe Domenichelli, before we went to officially accept them, they did a punch list. They satisfied the punch list items. When the warranty came up for expiration, Joe and Ron did another walkthrough because we were talking about, we had issues with the storm drain you know, about whose responsibility was it to clean it out. They did clean it out, and we are satisfied that all items have been taken care of.
Did we get a schedule of values?
I'm sorry, say that
again. Did we get a schedule of values for all that work they put in?
We did not, but we can request that.
That seems like we got a price put.
Oh, book, right, to be able to
put it in our reserves.
Yeah. You know.
So, because Mike, when last year when we did it, when there was a resolution to accept the infrastructure, and I did read on the resolution a list of items that we requested, and I think you said received. I'd have to look at the resolution.
It's generally,
but I'm not sure.
This was actually a grand jury item. The value that we are given needs to be incorporated into our financials. Okay. So we just need the dollar amount. So, yeah, we'll get that. Thank you.
Item C, repair of the broken water conveyance pipe for Granley's at Calero Reservoir. So the current update on that as of yesterday, we've removed the broken section that is in the picture. They have welded in the connection flanges on both sides of the pipe. They have mortared the areas where the weld was at. They will be bringing in the section of pipe either Friday or Monday. Once they connect it, then they will be mortaring, because there's a 36-inch down to a 33. They're going to mortar kind of like a slope, so it's for ease of water flow. The plan, I spoke with Josh yesterday. The plan is to be able to test, have it put in, connected, and be able to test next Wednesday or Thursday. The plan is to run water through there to fill up the pipe, check to make sure that there's no leaks and everything is fine. So that's kind of where we're at. As of yesterday,
you're going to back up the water from the lake, or you're going to turn the pumps on?
We're going to turn the pumps on. I've spoken with, because the water's down in Calero, so I've spoken with our water rights guy. We can turn, because I spoke with our regulator, and he's like, that's not my area. He said, speak to our water rights. So I spoke to him, and he said, yes, we are able to do it, but any water that we pump, because it would be considered pumped storage, we have to, and we're technically taking it away from the CIA ditch. The amount that we pump, we have to release from, like, Clementia or something back into the CIA ditch.
Okay, any idea of what the magnitude of the dollars in the week?
Not at this time, no.
Okay.
Item D, Rio Oso tank flow meter installation. So, as it was discussed previously, the district purchased a flow meter, and it was put on the outside of the influent pipe at Rio Oso tank. It is providing flow. Daryl from Domenichelli and Associates actually came out last Thursday and downloaded the month's worth of information so that they can at least get it. Since we don't have flow meters going out, we can, as long as we know the flow going in and then the drop of the tank while that's going in and the time, we can calculate flow going out. So they are in the process of getting that information. I don't know. I'm going to have to talk with Daryl to see how much information they're going to need which will help them with the with their study that is being proposed a little bit later on, distribution study. But they can at least start calculating the amount of flow going into or coming out of that tank. Anything on that? No. Okay. Item number E, district raw water report methodology. If I remember correctly, we spoke about this last month. It went to the board, and there was some discussion on it, and it was asked to be brought back here for rediscussion. The as you know, the complaint or the request is to remove the amount of water in Clementia and not report and report it separately from the amount of available water that the district has to for producing potable water. So I brought it back here so we can bring it back to the committee, and then you guys can make a decision on which direction we want to go or move to the board.
Thoughts, Marty?
I think for item E and F, we've already answered it last time. I don't see any reason to change it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it makes any difference one way or the other, to be honest with you. Total, take line by line or total, or this, you can do in your head, you can, if you want to change it, you can. It's the line items that matter, not how they're totaled up.
Okay. So,
but I did have a thought on the survey. You know, my thought last time was, why spend the money if it really doesn't make any difference? Because we had the conversation about you can only take out of that lake what you pump in. So does it really matter what the capacity of it is? On the other hand, if our goal here is to be able to use it as potable water, to treatable water, and we can make that change. And I know somewhere in here I've got your memo on who you talk to. But if our goal is to be able to use all of it down to dead water, maybe it does matter what the true capacity of that reservoir is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess my thought is that water, since it's largely runoff, I forget the percentage of runoff to freshwater, is that it's probably not, it could serve as a backup supply, and I think it's the cheapest possible option for it. But we're pumping in a fraction of the amount that we can pump in because of the lack of storage. And so that money that could go to evaluate the capacity of Clementia might be better spent on evaluating other storage options, maybe another reservoir or a deeper reservoir of just fresh water, because I think the cost was in the range of 20.
It was 28,400.
28K, and I think I've heard that the cost of like deepening Calero was in the millions.
Yes.
Yeah, but there might be other locations that might be suitable for reservoir. So my sense is that even knowing how much Clementia has exactly it's not that dramatic of a infusion of new water as a new water supply. Because of the majority of the water being runoff, which has different, this is untechnical, but like things in it than the fresh water from the river, that would then require like more treatment. That's kind of my understanding. So I guess I'm sort of on the fence about the necessity of the survey of Clementia.
Well, let's back up and talk about that for a minute. Well, I've got your memo here where you said you talked to the Department of Drinking Water, two paths to use from Clementia as potable water. One path is to eliminate body contact, the other is specific legislation. So you didn't address here, is there a possibility of us getting permission to use runoff versus just what we pump in?
Well, I haven't actually talked to DDW. I talked to West Yost, who told me about their conversation with DDW, and we're teed up to talk to DDW, I think, next Thursday, a week from tomorrow. Their guy was on vacation for a while. But I have a separate question out to the water rights specialist about how much we can take out of Clementia based on our pumping of roughly 100 acre feet per year over the last decade or so. And we currently have the right to pump in 850 acre feet, I think. 850, is it 800? Whatever it is.
800.
800 per year. But there's no ability to pump in that much because the runoff takes that capacity. So it's sort of a similar situation with Calero and Chesbro, where we have the right to pump in more water, but because it's already filled and the water came too soon because the snow melted early, you can't take advantage of that pumping, right? So
that just doesn't make any sense to me. I think we need to back up even one more step and find out the reasoning behind why we can't take runoff out of that reservoir. It's all water. Am I missing something?
Why we can't take the runoff out of Clementia for potable usage?
Yeah.
Oh, so there. The issue with that is that, well, we'll find out more from DDW, but essentially that there is, yeah, it's like 85-90% runoff, and then, 10% freshwater, but then all of that has the body contact, which is what their opposition is to it. The permits people they say you have the right, you can use it for municipal usage, but then it goes to DDW for,
So just so I'm clear, the permit people say we can use the runoff. They don't care. And why DDW would care whether or not we take out runoff versus pumped water, I don't understand.
As Mimi alluded to, you have different constituents in the water. Usually runoff would have a higher nitrogen content in it, and then we could remove it.
We're not pumping water into a separate area. The runoff and what we pump is all mixed together, and then we have the right to pull it out and treat it.
So I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm thinking that, and this is just a thought, because we get almost the same runoff into the other lakes too. It's not that we can't treat it in the water plant, and maybe because one of the things that has to be done if we want to go down this line, and is there, the DDW is going to want several you know, times of analysis to see what's in the water to ensure that we can remove whatever's in there. I know the permit state, you know, the permit states that we can't. Why they did it at that time, I don't know. But I think DDW is a little bit more concerned about the water quality and what's in it and what's coming in that runoff. Could be where they're coming from.
Okay. So the short answer is we need to have a conversation with them and figure out what it is that they're concerned about. The other thing is about the body contact. If you're in the only time we would use Clementia is if we're in a drought situation. Is the bot? My question to them would be, how long before we can pump it out where we exclude body contact? Is it a year? Is it okay from we need the water, now we're not going to have any body contact? That's a big deal.
Yeah, so that's one of our questions for next week. And I haven't, I've done sort of a rough draft on the conversations with the Wrights guy and the West Yost people about this, but I want to circle back with the answers to these other questions about, like, what portion of the water that's in Clementia could even be utilized, given what our infusions have been, and then also what they might require in terms of additional treatment as a result of the body contact. And then another question that I have is, like, what's the percentage of runoff in Clementia compared to runoff in Chesbro and Calero? I mean, is that volume-wise, does it get diminished as a result of that? So there's still a lot of questions to address.
That's a great question.
On all these.
Is it because it's being diluted? The runoff is being diluted in
by river water
in Chesbro and not Clementia, that, again, just on its surface, the whole thing doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's the Department of Drinking Water. They don't make sense, period. So
you said that.
I want to stay friendly with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't understand that we were going to pursue a permit to take Clementia down to dead storage. I didn't think that was in the cards. You think it is in the cards?
Can you explain what you mean by taking it down to dead storage?
Can we use the whole capacity?
Every drop of water in there.
Using every... No, I think the question I have is how much could we use?
Yeah.
But I think the problem with trying to resolve a drought situation is you never know how long it might last. And so that's where you have all these different scenarios of, okay, well, you know, we've got that worst-case scenario of 1977 and how long that lasted, and there was no ability to pump in. And so if you have an extreme situation like that, then theoretically you could, you know, try to get water fully from wherever you could, even if it required taking all of Clementia. But I don't think we have any longitudinal data about, like, the 77 drought and how it might have impacted Clementia. So I'm not thinking along those lines. I think we have to figure out, like, what would it take to tap into Clementia? How much of Clementia water could we actually be authorized to use? And then my other line of thinking is, how do you optimize your full utilization of your water right so that you get the water that you're supposed to get, right, and be able to put it someplace?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's our biggest issue right now of just, we have the right to pump, but because of the timing of the availability of it, which is too soon, like March, when we're still having enough water, you know, there's a couple months that we don't have any place to put it because of the earlier snow melt. That's my rough estimation of, like, what's going on.
Yeah. It seems like it's just premature to go do a survey of that lake until we know what we're after, right?
I was just going to say that, not that eloquently, but that was going to be my comment Travis was that we're going to put this on hold until we figure out whether it means anything.
Because just I know Adkins is in Oregon, and if and when we move forward with this, we'll be getting quotes for somebody local. He just happened to do the other two, so I just got a budgetary quote. So the local people, it might be, may or may not be.
Solitude could do it. They did it for
Joaquin. Yeah, so it's like we could do, I mean, we would check with people closer, you know, if and when we decide to go down that road.
Okay. Very good. Let's move on.
Okay. So I guess we took care of F, too. So item G, I will let Mimi take this one.
Yeah, so you have my memo in there. It's a little bit deeper in the packet. And we've just been continuing to evaluate this this idea of an integrated leak detection system in an advanced metering infrastructure. And we were going to have a demo tonight, but Director Booth had requested that demo in the Communications Committee meeting, and he can't join us tonight, so we're actually postponing it until, I think it'll have to be postponed until November, because the vendor that has the proprietary integration is not available until then. We have a quote from them, which is probably not going to be continued beyond December 31st of 24. There'll be price increases that they expect in January, so that'll change things, which is good to know for our submission of the federal grant that's available for smart water and energy efficiency, a program of Bureau of Rec. And so they will cover, my understanding is, at least 50%. So I have many examples of other grants for this, and we have the Regional Water Authority lined up to write a letter of support for such a grant application, and then we'll see what happens with that. And I think, you know, given the size of the investment, I think it's worth waiting for determination of whether or not we get funded by the feds to help cover the cost of it. We are very close to the 3,000 total connections, which would push us into the urban provider territory. And that does include additional reporting requirements, and that includes water loss audits. So at some time, we'll have to, you know, face the music about evaluating these water losses in the distribution system. But for now, I think we put in the grant application. We come back with the demonstration at the November board meeting, and then take care of it that way.
Marty, anything?
No, it sounds fine to me.
Yeah, I'm on board with it. Back to
H.
Distribution system study.
So we've attached, Domenichelli and Associates have attached a proposal to do a comprehensive study to determine additional tank sizes needed for future development throughout the whole distribution system. The proposal came in at $42,360. This is separate from what they're doing, separate but together to what they're doing, what they're trying to figure out with the Rio Oso tank. This is going to engulf the whole distribution system, so we have an idea of what is needed for not only now but future development for additional tanks. and storage tanks and stuff. So
this is more than storage tanks, though, right? This is size.
They're going to do a comprehensive study for amount, sizes. They went over the whole thing with in their proposal, but they're checking flows. They're going to do a complete in-depth study.
I wish Joe had showed up this morning to answer questions.
I apologize. I was busy getting other people for other things, and I did not get a hold of Joe, so that is my fault. I apologize. Okay. What I can do is if we move this to the board, I can see if we can I can have Joe here available at the board meeting.
Yeah, I have some questions. Just after reading his proposal, I just have a couple questions. And, so
is there some overlap with what the master plan is doing with regard to costs for tanks and such?
I think those are completely two different.
I thought they were going to give us costs for capital improvements to get us to the next level of houses.
Yeah, we're a little hampered by not having received the draft report still. Yeah. I've been hounding them for about 5 or 6 weeks now, but I'll ask about the inclusion of this in there, because I know there was a reference. Is the reason I asked Joe in June to not do the whole thing was because I felt like there was some overlap, and so the two consultants and Joe and I had a little chat, and they were able to provide him with some information that they'd already prepared. So I think there may be some work that they've done on the system. So let me follow up with that.
Yeah, part of that report's supposed to be capital improvement costs to get us to the next level of.
But aren't we apples and oranges? Isn't that capital improvements to provide the water, whereas this is to distribute the water?
No, I understood what it takes us to get to full build-out.
Delivery to?
One of them might be the manganese treatment for the water plant, more tanks. So I don't know what else is going to put in there, but I would imagine that Joe's going to probably do a more in-depth study than they were. They were going to get ballpark costs, just like
yeah.
To develop the walls. The wells, they're going to give us ballpark costs. But I wouldn't doubt this is more in-depth. But
well, the main question I was going to have, and so the main question I was going to have for Joe was, does this include the delivery system for recycled? Because that's coming up. That's going to be a big deal. How do we get? I mean, we've got purple pipe. We've got a pipe underneath the highway now that was paid for by someone else. But we need to, as I recall, we need to pressurize that system and
for, yes, we would either need to pressurize it or for the recycle, or we would need to be able to pump it to an elevated storage tank somewhere to provide gravity.
Right. No, I'm just do you know
I don't think this does not include the recycle system. This was just
I think it's something we got to start looking at.
So I mean, one of the things I can do is go back to Joe if we wanted to do it all in one shot and say, hey, can you put in this study analysis of what's going to be needed for recycled water, piping, infrastructure, potential places to maybe put a storage tank. Are we going to pump straight from the EQ basin using VFDs? there's a lot of different directions that we can go depending on if we want to do straight delivery or if we want to go to a storage tank, because our main issue is dechlorination. We don't want to burn up people's lawns with the high chlorine. But, I mean, you have inline dechlor you can do. You can pump to a storage tank.
Well, that's something that I think Joe should start looking at and advising us on how to move forward on this, because I think it's time. I know that for a long time we've been talking about why are we using potable water to irrigate Stonehouse Park when we have the infrastructure to get recycled water up there. We need to start looking at, okay, what does that look like and how do we do that?
Okay.
So what I would say, whether it's part of this proposal or a separate proposal, but we need for him to tell us what he wants to do that work.
Okay.
Looking at this agreement, I don't see anything in here about costs.
It's
developing costs for construction to do what he's proposing. I didn't see that in here.
Developer costs?
Or well, whatever developing? He comes up with as what he needs for this tank.
Yeah, he probably needs some sort of. How much does a tank cost? That should be part of his. Part of his analysis.
This almost looks like it's geared toward Rio Oso, right?
No.
It's not.
No, this study is geared for the whole distribution system. Now,
okay.
Now, if you'd like, we can.
So if it's not costs, maybe the costs are going to come from the master
plan. IWMP.
Yeah.
Well, and Lumos is also doing that CIP study.
Yeah, but they need to know what's needed.
Right. So if you'd like, we can bring this to the next improvements committee. We put it back on the agenda. I'll have Joe here to be able to answer questions.
Let's do that. I in good conscience can't tell the board that we've looked at this and we're in agreement. We need more information.
There is a need to get going on the Rio Oso tank, though.
Yeah.
But
are we covered on it?
The Rio Oso authority, the request for the Rio Oso study was provided in June. So I think he's working on that right now.
Yeah,
that was the separation out from the full thing. And so that he's looking at the flow meter data, and they're including that information to be able to ascertain whether or not Rio Oso is, you know, has enough capacity for residences.
But there one thing in this report that says you can establish tank criteria for tank sizing criteria, and that dumps into Rio Oso.
Rio Oso is definitely a part of the overall
system.
So I would imagine what they'll do is take the data, you know, the analysis that they're doing now for Rio Oso and incorporate it into this as a component of the whole picture.
So do you think he's going to, under this original contractor, whatever you call it, that he's going to come up with tank sizing criteria?
Well, for Rio Oso, I mean, I think the direction that's given in that task order is to specifically determine whether Rio Oso's capacity is adequate for the community as it exists now with fire and emergency, and then how much extra capacity exists to address the new homes in residences east and west that would be reliant on that. So,
but he said, and I asked him last time he was here, that he is going to figure out a criteria that the district should adopt, even for sizing a new tank.
Yes, yes.
Over and above Rio Oso.
Right, and I think it's this, you know, three-part thing of need from the users, the regular community need, and then the emergency and the fire.
Yes.
fire flow. So, the, but he's got, you know, percentages of those, of the whole tank.
But he said he might need to recommend a revision to the one-third.
Yeah, so I think there's going to be more specificity about what the split is on those three pieces.
Okay.
That's what I'm expecting in the Rio Oso report.
So he can keep going until we sort the scope out here.
Yeah, this this won't slow him down on Rio Oso.
Okay. No, no.
If we put this off.
Yeah. Okay.
So it is an item currently on the agenda for tonight's meeting. Do you want to just make it be a discussion item instead of an action item, and you'll report to the board what's going on with it?
Please.
Okay. Easy.
Development update. Do we really?
There, we have a. There's an attachment to it.
It's a one pager. Yeah. It just formalizes the lots that are included in the 670 FSA. The only caveat I would state is that the Murrieta Gardens, commercial and non-commercial, are included in that just to tally up to the 670. Because they were originally part of the 670 financing and services agreement. However, at the 11th hour, they withdrew from that agreement. So it's in there, and I've included it just because I wanted to see how we got to the 670. But those are built out now anyway, so they're sort of irrelevant. There was some commercial lots, I think, that weren't developed. Those would be under the RM North, right? So all of these are included in there just to get the count up to the original 670, but those are really now part of the Rancho Murrieta North. And having stated that, I'll probably pull them off for the next time with maybe a note that just says, you know, the original count of this 670 FSA was 670, but as a result of whatever late changes, this portion is actually properly removed from the count and is part of a different FSA.
Okay.
I do have a public comment.
Certainly.
Jim Farrell.
It's me. Thank you.
Come on down.
Yeah, I'm here, Mason. Basically, you know, I've been trying to follow along with your water study here and see where we're at. And so I have a couple of comments and a couple of questions here. And first of all, I just want to say that last month when I was here and I saw this first summarized development report, I was really happy to kind of see this because, you know, we had a lot of debate about the data, you know, the data that's in the plan. And I saw this, I thought, oh, somebody's trying to take this thing on head on. And so that's great. And then I saw this one for this meeting, and I thought, well, that's even better yet, because it's really starting to clarify it. We're now getting down to some of the real hard numbers that I hopefully are pretty tight. Although this little caveat about the commercial property now kind of adds a little more, because I'm trying to track these myself just from a planning standpoint. And because I think it's really key that this part be clean, because this is the basis. You know, this and your current connections are the basis of the study going forward. You know, you want these to be as tight as you can possibly get them to be, because you start as you go forward with your planning process, you're going to extrapolate this data out. And so if it's wrong, the error is just getting bigger, you know, and the more and more you use it. So this, you know, this is really key. I think this is a wonderful thing that you're doing here. I have a couple of questions. Does this now also tie with the was it the Baker and Williams planning map? Is this a CSD product? You know, the map that shows all the different projects that are planned, you know, by the different zones, and then it shows the numbers of the units and stuff like
that.
No,
I think that's B&W. I think it's B&W.
Yeah, it's a Baker Williams or something like that.
Yeah.
That's a developer.
So it's a developer. Do you use this? I mean, is this?
Well,
this is official, right? I mean, this is kind of a real thing.
That's, you know, it's hard to say with the Baker and Williams. They are, or they have been involved in a few projects, you know, in the community. But I think the lots that are anticipated. For the Rancho Murrieta North FSA, those are still sort of aspirational. They are not yet blessed by the county. Yeah. So we, the data that you're looking at in that one pager, that's for plans that have actually been authorized by the county.
FSA group,
the 670 FSA minus the Murrieta. Yeah. But yes, that's what we're using. Because the Baker and Williams, that was originally closer to 1,200 residences, and now it's 697 behind the gates, and then like under 300, you know, around here at the 39 acres. So, but it's not yet mapped.
Right. And, okay, so that clarifies that. Even though the numbers do kind of, I'm just trying to make the numbers kind of match between these things. So my second question on that then is, as you've now got these numbers, you know, kind of cleaned up, mm-hmm. although there is a little inconsistency in how you handled the 39 lots
acres
that were pre-approved for Riverview versus the 68 that were pre-approved for residencies. You know, you've handled those things on this chart differently. You cluster the residencies ones all as 198, whereas you, on the other ones, you kind of separated from 30. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
30, 110, the other should have been 68 and went 130 or
That data is all in there. It's just it wasn't sorted by the subdivision's subname. Like the broad name is residences, and then there's a separate category for east and a separate category for west.
And at this point, maybe it's moot. I'm not sure. But, you have approved for the connections.
Yeah, they're all approved. So. But we can stratify it and show it that way. It's all in the system for us to be able
and
to
that's,
show.
You know, and I think that's the thing is, you know, as I told you, I've got kind of a planning background. And I think what we want to have here so we can deal with some of these angst that's in the community is, you know, if we have good internal consistency with the data, and there's our finance guy here, so he knows, you know, then it gets a lot easier to answer questions and to know that the data is right and have, you know, transparency and confidence in it.
Yeah.
And so so that's kind of what I'm trying to find this out for myself. And when I'm kind of seeing things that don't match up, that's like, well, no wonder people are upset, you know. So.
Right. Well, a lot of that information comes from our records, but then some of the names for the type of lots, the sizes of lots, that came from largely from the IWMP consultants. And what I hope to add into that is the projected usage for internal and external water, and then you can see how their model, you know, comes up and how much per thing just with a click of a button. So that's on my aspirations
that
list.
That is excellent, because
right?
That is actually my next question.
Oh, okay.
Last month I thought, she's going in the direction that I hope she's going, and you are.
Yeah.
So because that is my next question to you is that, so when we approved, or you approved, the connections at the last meeting, which mm-hmm. was, of course, fairly controversial, the attorney's letter, you know, kind of went through some math in there, and particularly on page 3, he kind of ran through, a bunch of the connections and which ones are approved. I've been all off. But at the end of the day, he kind of came up and said, "Well, it looks like there's about 257 additional acre feet of water that's necessary for these additional connections that you were going to make." Mm-hmm. You know, the other, I think it was 140. Yeah, you're going to do an additional 140 connections. So the question I have on is, can I see that mathematical spreadsheet where he came up with that 257? I mean, is that not a big secret or anything, is it? I could try to reproduce it, but it'd be nicer if I could just see it.
Well, what I'll try to do is have that for next month. I don't know what, I think he probably used this mammoth Excel spreadsheet that the developers had, but it's got like 40 different worksheets.
It should have been a small version of what's in the plan, I would assume.
Yeah,
where
that's
they break
like
it down by lot size, and then set, and then they multiply the cross.
Let me see if I can get you like a PDF or a one pager of that one.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll check into that.
Just be informative.
Yeah.
For that, and I'd appreciate that. The last piece that I have on that then is, in that letter, he also refers to the ability to make an adjustment to the water supply augmentation fee. And with that in mind, and some of these other conversations that you've been having earlier today, I would again, as I think the very first time I ever went to one of these meetings on this, I suggested, gee, you know, you should be running this study in a different way, where you should be running it, first of all, with what is the demand for those things that you have approved and are committed to do and have online now, versus the whole build-out thing. And, you know, the original water study, Mattis just lumped all of that stuff together. And you actually have two levels of issues that are involved here. And you clearly set that up now with last month's approving the other thing. That this next iteration of that water study should be two different scenarios in there run. One should be a scenario that shows, given everything now that you've approved and you've got up and running, look at the data that way. And then the second one, and they've got this all in a computer model. They
yes.
can do this.
Yeah.
Then the second one should be full build-out creates a different picture. And I think the reason why that's going to be important is because as you get to the phase where you're saying, okay, we have this commitment now, where we are today. You've made contractual obligations to sign up, you know, hook up water. There's going to be a cost associated with that. And there's going to be an additional cost associated with the obligations that you now have that you've committed to. And you're probably going to want to isolate those costs from the full build-out ones. You see what I'm saying? Because to meet your demands for these extra 600 homes or so, 550, I guess is what it is now, that you're bringing on with your current thing, that's going to cost so much to do that. It's going to cost a lot more when you start adding another 700-800 units and that, you know, the wish list thing further on. And then you're going to have to figure out, okay, who's paying for this? And can you capture the fees or the capital expenses associated with the cost of the ones that you're now obligated for? Can you capture it through this fee, this augmentation fee? I mean, how are you going to pay for that? And that's going to be a lot big different question than how do you pay for the full build-out model, which is going to cost you even more because you're going to add another 800 units and when you do that. There's no way in the world that you can do supply that and what you've got obligated together. So I think you can have to segment these things together and use this tool that this is a really great planning tool that they've got for you. Mm-hmm. Use it, make sure that, but make them do it the way you want to do it, not the way they want to do it. And make sure the data is accurate. So that's my last request there, is that when you do the study, make her run it two ways. Don't let her get away with it the way she's doing it right now. It's not doing you any good. So, any questions?
No, I have a comment. I think there's going to be a need for determining what number of lots would trigger not being able to provide water. You know, maybe six, maybe they did a study for 697. Maybe we can actually get another 100 lots. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's where this tool will get you there.
That's what I see as something that's going
to
be needed.
The first thing you need to cover now is you've got a commitment. Mm-hmm. You just last month you made a commitment. You've got a contractual commitment, and like you said, you want to avoid lawsuits and all that stuff, which is absolutely the right thing to do. You've got a commitment to provide enough water for everything. Never mind the 697 dream plan that's out there right now. Focus in on what you got a commitment to do right now, and figure out what's that going to cost you, and where are you going to get the money from. Then, once you've got that clear, then go to the next phase. And that would be my very strong encouragement, because you're bunching them together right now, and I think it's going to get you in a situation where you don't know where it's up from down.
Yeah. Thanks for your comments. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm sure that was in the works, that we would figure out what the fee would be based on just the 670, and then, okay, if we add these and 697 homes, okay, now what is that?
Yeah.
What is that fee going to look like, and is it fair for this group of developers to pay? When we need to see the numbers to know if it means anything.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different pieces to this. I think the idea of distribution lines from the source to the new construction, that's entirely on the developer. Like, the district would not be paying for that. That would be their cost. The water supply augmentation fee is a fee that's been being charged since, I think, at least 2017, perhaps even earlier, maybe 2014. That was to find new sources of supply. And that one, there's actually an item on the agenda for tonight to authorize me to go into a contract for water supply augmentation fee and rate analysis to pursue, you know, a study on just that before December 31st, because that the timeline for the water supply augmentation fee is every January it increases. And then...
So that's different than what I was thinking it was then.
Yeah, it's a reserve bucket, and it's completely for finding additional sources of supply. And I think you were talking a little bit about, well, what's it going to cost to get the water there and the sewer and all those lines. All of that is part of the developer's infrastructure costs that they're responsible for. And the district would be responsible for determining whether there is enough water, and then also determining what the rate is per lot, you know, per development, to make sure that there is enough water. And then just to kind of talk about the current model, I don't think that the public has really gotten a good understanding of the sophistication of the model that's included as part of the IWMP, because it is so, it has so many variables that can be considered, and all of the different parameters can be changed in order to produce different scenarios. And I think because of the, you know, necessity to keep things kind of simple, there might have been two or three samples, you know, scenario samples that were shown. But really, there's infinite possibilities that can be included in there about the planning. And then my last comment, because I know we need to move on, just that the 2010 survey, I think you were talking about, and that was a really broad stroke. In the 2024 model, you know, those specific lot sizes that are captured in both my development report and in the very big Excel spreadsheet, they show with a lot of detail the anticipated water use both externally and internally. And so that gives us a lot of detail, you know, instead of just, oh, you know, one house is 750 acre feet, you know.
You want to get all of your demand into that lot.
Yep, exactly.
Every lot should fit somewhere in that item there.
Yeah, and so then that goes to Director Pohl's comment of, well, what is the threshold? And so it changes. You can't just say, well, we could do 100 but not 700, because the size of the lot has a direct correlation to the amount of water utilized. Like some of these really, really big lots, they may not have any difference in usage on the interior, but they've got a lot of land to landscape and water potentially, unless they go, you know, native grasses or something that just survives in California without it. So there's a lot of stuff there.
So instead of, is it 100 lots, mm-hmm. is it 50 of the estate lots, mm-hmm. and 50 of the other, or yeah. a combination?
Yeah, we don't know that yet.
We don't know.
Right. Yeah, like what's the sweet spot of what's doable, you know? Right. But it's, I think we can all agree it's something less than 700.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I know you want to move on, and I'll be quiet, but I, you know, one of the reasons why I think you need to see what are the use rates that are in the model, because that's where some of the debate is, your next level of debate is going to go there.
Yeah.
You know, because now here's what's going to happen. I'm just predicting, I don't know for sure, you're going to have use rates that are over here based upon current
life. Exactly, yes.
Then we're going to hear something about, oh, but new homes are so much more efficient than old homes. And so their use rates are going to be this amount. That's going to be like half of what the current one is. And then the question is, okay, are you going to build your future plan based upon an assumption that all the new homes are going to use half the water as the old homes that are even the same size? And it's like, I'm going to tell you right now, here comes your next level of conflict.
Yeah.
You and I both know that's not how it's going to end up 20 years out when you look at it. It's like the federal budget is always getting balanced 20 years out, right? So it's like, that will be the next attack
the next,
to make sure
yeah.
that this plan is
viable. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got right risk management assumptions built into it. It's not, you know, rosy glass, you know,
yeah.
rosy sunglasses. Get their arms around and say, okay, that makes sense.
I think it takes a lot to dig into these issues and to try to understand them. And I really respect and appreciate your efforts to try to wrap your hands around it, because I think it just helps to elevate the conversation overall in the community about this. I think that's very important.
Thank you. Thank you. I think it's a phenomenal study. Mm-hmm. And I think if you guys get it right, you know, you've got this whole district on the right path for the next 20 years. It's got to get right this time.
Yeah.
I have the impression that earlier studies have been just kind of blown through. You know, get this one right. Plus, like you're saying, you're going to be at the 3,000-meter connection thing here. You're going to burn it. You've got a whole new ballgame you're going to play from here on out. So,
yeah.
I'll call you back.
Okay.
Well, as much as I want to move on, I can't help myself. Question. So you divided up the augmentation versus the delivery system, and the augmentation for more water is, or the delivery system is 100% on the developer to get whatever water to their development. What happens to this, the recycle study that we were just talking about, where the existing customers are going to benefit, as will the developer? Is that a split cost?
It's like stump the GM day.
Well, we're just so used to you having all the right answers that we just assume you got that on the tip of your tongue. Okay, I take it back. It's something that will be addressed as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are new developments that don't have any recycling, but there are definitely these irrigation areas like Stonehouse Park and other that don't need potable water. And so they present an opportunity for us, and they've been sort of anticipated, but they've gotten like, you know, halfway to the finish line, and then there are these obstacles. And I think in order for us to be responsive to the changing water situation, what I think the consultants call the water imbalance, the demand supply imbalance, you know, the water becomes more precious, and you have to utilize that recycled water in the way that it, you know, maximizes the retention of the potable water. That's my sense of it. And I do feel like in 2006 and 2010, whenever, I don't think the situation was as dire, and I think that led to the broad stroke analyses, right? But right now, given the summer that we've all just had, the summer that we had last year, you know, all these different scenarios with fire and increasing heat, and and how that impacts the water and when it comes, I think you have to be more surgical, more granular in terms of knowing, you know, what the situation is. And that's where, knowing the recycled water and using that comes into play. It's like, you know, you just have to be, you know, super respectful with every drop of water. It's a new era.
Just real quick, I have Jeremy here to go over item J and L, and he's got a meeting for item J at 11 at Main Lift North. Can we cover those?
Great reason to move on. Right. Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt you, sir. I'm just
I lost control. Like this is a Tim Mabee meeting.
Yeah. So. I apologize, and I don't mean to be disrespectful.
Let's do it.
So item J. And I have Jeremy, who is our Prodigy Electric, our district engineer. I'm sorry, our district electrician, to answer questions if necessary. Over at Main Lift North, the last time we had a power outage and Main Lift North was affected, the generator, the ATS switched over, did its job, generator turned on. The on-call operator came. By the time he got out here, the power had been restored. For quite a while, and the ATS didn't switch back over, even though Smud Power was back to it. And so he had to actually turn the generator off manually, put it in auto, and then it had switched back. I'd asked Jeremy to come out and look at it. We have for quite a while now known that infrastructure for that ATS is going bad. But the problem that we have is we share anything that has to do with the generator or the equipment there, we share costs with the fire department on that. So anything that work has to be done, they have to sign off on too. So I've asked the their maintenance supervisor to go over there, and Jeremy's going to go over there and talk with them so that they can evaluate to see where we're at. Cost wise, and if they're willing to say sign off and say yeah, okay, let's move forward. That's about the extent of what I know about it. If you had any further questions, I would have to refer them to Jeremy.
I wish I knew enough to ask a question, but I don't.
Okay. That's fine.
You're talking to a couple of civil engineers, not electrical engineers. I'm sorry. Ran over our head.
Okay. So then basically what we're going to do is once Jeremy is done speaking with them, and when I'm done here, I'll go over there too. But then we'll get a recommendation. Jeremy will let me know what's going on. A lot of it is just going to be, is the fire department going to sign off? Because when Tom was here, Tom Henning, the old general manager, and we had a meeting over there, when we were thinking about changing the generator, SAC, the fire department goes, man, we got generators a lot older than this. You're fine. We're not going to sign off on replacing the generator. So we're having the issue again, and so we're going to bring it up to them.
Travis, can I just ask, what does ATS stand for?
Automatic
transfer system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. And if it's okay, I'd like to just skip to item L.
Certainly.
And I was not, 6B lift station rehab. There has been back and forth on the Aqua Sierra and K-Hob. They are doing the upgrade.
Can I just interrupt you just for a quick segment here? Lift station 6B is part of the infrastructure that is near the new retreats development. And there was an analysis done on the capacity of the infrastructure, and it was determined that the addition, and Mr. Farrell will appreciate this, the addition of the additional homes from retreats would put too much of a burden on the system, and that the lift station needed to be enhanced to handle the additional capacity. And it was agreed that the developer would cover the cost of the upgrade, and the district paid for 50% of it or something like that. I can't remember. We incorporated that into their lot fees, and we found out when we were finalizing the remainder of the lot fees that were due that in fact they had not finished this, and so then they were scurrying to finish it because we said, well, hold the presses, you're not getting any more connections until you actually finish this component. And then there were some inspections done, and it was determined that they had not used the wire that was specified in the plans, which has specific properties that allow it to be used in underwater and moist situations where there is also this specific chemical that Jeremy would probably remember the name of. It's like H sulfur chloride or something like that. H2S, yes. So that's where we're at, and so we're holding their feet to the fire to actually follow the specs, even though it requires them to pull the wiring and to redo it. And Jeremy, what do you want to add to that?
I think you pretty much covered most of that.
Okay.
So, and I know that there was, I know that there was a phone call meeting which I was not able to
be a part of.
Because the drawings say a specific wire, a specific stranded wire. And when Jeremy went over and did the inspection of the thing, he noticed that it was a different type of wire. And so the other wire was a more multi-rated wire versus the specific wire that we wanted. And so I know there was a conversation between Jeremy, General Manager Mimi, and Patrick and Joe. And so I don't know what the decision was on that, but I do know we got a text from, I got a text from Chase saying, you know, am I rewiring this or not? You guys are holding my feet to the fire. It's going to cost me about $7,000 in 3 days. I had made a suggestion. I was talking with Jeremy, you know, would it be worth it to the district if he's going to rewire it with just the MTW? Jeremy is recommending a tinned style MTW. If there's not a significant cost difference, would it be worth it for the district to supply that extra cost? I don't know what was discussed.
And we're supportive of that.
Okay.
But Chase did not return my call. But yeah, if you can communicate to him that we'd like to proceed with the tinned MTW?
Yes, tinned MTW.
Tinned MTW. Because that is that is a little bit of an upgrade from the plans, but if he's going to go and have to procure the wire anyway, that particular type of wire is more consistent with the electrical specifications that Jeremy's company normally uses. We're kind of in the same boat with engineering where we don't have standards that have been updated in recent years, but this particular type of wire is the most likely to not corrode over time in that environment of the lift station. So that's our direction to them. But I think this is primarily to inform you of, you know, what's going on with the lack of additional connections for retreats. I think there's actually like 11 left, and they're not very happy about it. But, you know, our job is to make sure that the work that they put in on this lift station lasts for a good long time. So that's...
So I just didn't know if you had any questions for Jeremy before I let him go.
It sounds reasonable to me what you're proposing. Huh? So
that would be
it's not crazy money. But
thank you, sir. No, appreciate
like
your time.
$1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Item K. I'm going to step back just for item K. The North Gate UPS upgrade to make it compatible with the generator. Recently, it was brought to my attention that when the generator at North Gate does its weekly test, that all the computers and monitors go out and it takes a long time for them to come back up. After the inspection, it was determined that Jeremy actually did the inspection. It was determined that the UPS backup was not sufficient enough to keep the computers and monitors going during the switch. And so we had brought this to Andy's attention, and we ordered the proper ATSs, and as far as I know, and I don't know if they said anything to you, Mark, as far as I know, that problem has been resolved.
Yeah, that's resolved.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, let's see. I want to move on to Basin 5, Lost Lake. There's been multiple complaints from residents about Basin 5. It's a drainage basin for the it's a drainage basin for the district that's over on the south. There were multiple complaints about the smell and the overgrowth in the basin. We got a quote from Solitude Lake Management to come in and harvest the overgrowth and chemically treat the duckweed and all the growth that's actually on the water. Normally, the district. Normally, the utility staff will, do annual cleaning on it. It got away from us quite badly. There's a lot of weeds and stuff in there. So they gave me a quote to come out and do the initial harvesting, and to do the chemical treatment. The one-time chemical treatment, because this is going to be an ongoing issue. It's a drainage basin. And what we can do if we want to go this direction is they can come out with their harvester, get in there, harvest all the weeds out, do their chemical treatment. We got the aerators that are at the bottom. We got those replaced, and we got those working. One of the thoughts is that maybe we would try to get the fountains working. When we've had staff attempt to get over there and do work, they'll maybe get a day's worth of work done, and then they'll get called off to water leak or something else and not be able to get back to it. So it was requested by one of the board members that we get a quote to try to see if we can get that cleaned up. Now, the one thing I do want to point out is it's going to come back next year. We can, once we get the weeds out of it, we can make sure we pay a little bit more closer attention to it so it doesn't get it overgrowth like that again. But we cannot, as a district, chemically treat it, so the duckweed's going to come back. And so this might be, in my opinion, an ongoing thing. So I don't know if we want to do the initial cleaning and treating and see how long that lasts or where we go.
Can I just jump in?
Yeah.
This is definitely within my spending authority, but it's on here as an item because this lake is, or this drainage basin really, it has multiple owners and different entities. The country club, RMA, and the district all have responsibility for different pieces of it. And so we had responsibility for the aerator, and I've been trading phone calls with Rod Hart to try to get more clarity about, you know, the jurisdictions involved in this. But this is not our drainage ditch. That's my understanding of it. And I don't know, Travis, if you have any other, insights into this. But I think that the issue here is the precedence for taking care of somebody else's area of responsibility. And that's where I think I haven't found any good documentation that helps to illuminate, you know, who's responsible for what. And I think what we could do is come back the next time, and hopefully I'll have a little bit more time to get some information from Rod Hart and from the country club to figure out, you know, who's responsible for what. Because I think the fact that it has so many stewards means that it's just kind of everybody neglects it. And so that's not a good situation. But I think that we have to be, careful for our ratepayers, that we take care of what we're responsible for, rather than what might be the country club's responsibility or what have you.
Yeah, and Rod knows the history of this thing, but as I recall, going back, it was a split. There was, and you won't find anything written. It was all just verbal. Okay, if you do this, then we'll do that. But Rod will remember all that. And yes, it was split costs. And I don't remember how it was split or who was responsible for what. But
okay.
But yeah, that you're absolutely headed in the right direction on that.
So. Travis, how does water stay in that thing all summer? Is it country club runoff?
No, it's all just drainage from going up farther up on the south. And so there's two drainage areas in there, and both of those go to Mainland South. And so we have a valve that we have a lower valve that just takes care of the day-to-day drainage, and then we have the bigger valve for flooding. And the bigger valve for flooding goes into a different section of Mainland South versus the regular drainage. And so Michael Fritchie had told me that he found out that the responsibility, his belief, the responsibility for the district was the drainage basin up to where it crests. Comes up the bank and crests over, and that the rest of it was the country clubs. So then that is the direction that the district, that is the belief that the district has been going off of for the past 3 years. Because I know it's always been a question of whose is what, whose is what, whose is what.
Well, and it was decided many years ago. You know, every year we get complaints about that area. And again, just, I don't want to make a short story long, but Rod remembers all the history, and I think they put in the fountains because it was a aesthetic feature for the neighborhood, and we decided we'd put in the aerators because that was the water quality thing. And yeah, no, you're on the right track.
Okay, because maybe we can figure out how to come up with an annual budget and split it, and then somebody takes responsibility for just maintaining it with those costs, but it's shared. Something. We'll figure something out.
Yeah, good.
There is a statement of mutual understanding about Basin 5. It's on the internet.
Oh, it's in writing.
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's
Would
a
you
first.
Like to hear some of the highlights?
Yeah, the highlights.
Okay. CSD will purchase and install all of the required equipment. RMA will allow CSD to connect the equipment to an RMA power source. After the equipment is installed, the RMA maintenance department will assume maintenance responsibility for the fountain only. RMA will pay 50% of the power requirements each month for the fountain operation. All parties enter into this freely. There's no reason for legal resources to prepare, hold harmless, or liability. So it leaves off some pretty major things. I'll make sure that I send this to everybody.
Who takes care of the weeds?
Right.
Yeah.
And the aerators, it's basically they're going to take care of part of the fountain.
Okay, I'll send this to everybody.
Yep, thank you. All right, Travis.
All right.
We should
state and federal regulatory compliance issues. So we are currently, we've contracted with Condor Earth. We are currently behind on our state and federal regulation reporting for our chlorine gas system for both the water and the wastewater plant through CalARP, the state, and the federal, which includes our risk management plan and our process safety management plan. These were neglected or forgotten about from previous
They're a five-year plan, so the 5 years was up in June, May or June.
Right.
And so nobody had to think about it in the prior 5 years, and so nobody thought about it.
Yeah. So, and then the gentleman, that because we had a gentleman on staff that would let us know whenever they were coming up due, and he retired abruptly for medical reasons, and you can't even get a hold of him. And so this was brought to our attention. We are currently getting all caught up, and that includes the current inspection that we just had a couple of months ago. And I was not able to get an answer from them on if there's going to be any potential fines because of the lateness of it. All they said was, well, once you get everything done, we'll see. So I brought this to you. I wanted to bring this to the Improvements Committee just to let you know that we have the issue. We are currently correcting the issue. There could be some, we could get fined, potentially fined for this issue.
Okay.
So, repairs to the recycled water line on the Yellow Bridge. So, a couple weeks ago, the recycled water line sprung a leak on one of the expansion couplers, the rubber part of the expansion coupler. The leak was noticed on 8/30/24 during a routine inspection of the pipe. Once the leak was noticed, we started draining the recycled water out of it. We had to have TNT come out, and they tapped in a 2-inch tap that we could hook a fire hose up to so we can run the water to the country club, because recycled water, we can't just let it go out. And we've been doing that and doing that and doing that. And as soon as we thought we would make some headway, we come back in a couple of days and it's completely pressurized up again. We are unable to find any isolation valves on any plans. There are valves on the ground by the recycle bridge on by hole one side. And there's three valves there. None of them are on any plans. We've determined that one of them is the main lift north sewer line. By basically turning the pump on and off of Mammoth North with ears. One of them is water, and we don't know what the other one is, because, like I said, they're not on any plans. And so what I've done is we've talked with TNT. I got this quote. Tapmaster can come out, and they can do temporary line blockages on both sides of the bridge, and then we can drain the pipe from the 2-inch that was already drilled in there, so that we are able to replace the expansion couplers. We have the parts. I'm a little fuzzy on how they actually do it. There was planned to be out tomorrow. We did get the quote. Mimi had requested last night. We tried to get another quote for the cost. I got I just got a text from Josh a little while ago, and he says we wouldn't be able to get any support for a quote for a few weeks, because Tapmasters is the main people in this area, and they would be able to come out on Thursday. We are currently seeping out of the expansion coupler. The water has not reached the Cosumnes River, so but we are seeping out. So we do need to get this issue resolved. And so due to the cost, I asked that it be put on and brought to you guys as an emergency issue. And I figured if we move forward, then it can go to the board tonight, and then we can continue on with Tapmaster coming out tomorrow. Josh called them, I guess, pulled in a favor with somebody to get them out here tomorrow so we can get this done.
What's that cost?
$28,500.
Yeah, it seems like an important thing to do.
It kind of is. And if to be absolutely honest, if we weren't this close to it, and if I was able to get Tapmaster out here yesterday, yeah, I would have asked for forgiveness instead of permission. But I'm in a position right now where I can ask permission first.
It'll be interesting to see how they do this. I've never seen this done. Bolt-on turnkey. It obviously is a machine because there is additional rental per day per machine. I don't know how you do that. How do you stop a live line?
That's kind of because I was under the impression they were putting in permanent ones, but apparently these are just temporary. So I'm kind of curious to see it myself. And then because once they pull that out, they're going to have to
reconnect it.
Thank you. And so I talked with Josh because his thought was, because they said it takes about 4 hours on each side to get it prepped and ready to go, so it's like an 8-hour day. And Josh is like, well, I don't think you guys want us out there, after hours doing this. His plan was to come, his staff and our staff, on Friday to do this repair. But my question to him was, well, we need to verify. Because at $1,350, if we got to go a second day for each machine, so two machines, is it cheaper to pay his staff to work a little later versus pay the extra $2,700? He's going to talk with Tapmaster. He thinks the time starts, the 24-hour start, once they get everything done. So he's going to get verification on that.
All right. So, action? Are we recommending approval? What are we doing there?
It's a discussion item. That it go to the board for emergency approval.
What you said.
I agree.
Yeah. Right? Okay. Thank you very much.
And, all right. And I just thought we could sit here and talk for a while. No.
How's the family?
I'm mom.
We got time.
Yeah, lunch is not for another. No. That's all that I have. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Any comments from the? More comments from the public? Amelia, any cards?
No, I don't have any more cards.
Good.
I have one comment.
All right.
Can you give us an update on the hypochlorite at the wastewater treatment plant, the bid?
You want it right now? I can do, yeah. So the RFP went out for bid through a service that that Amelia had set up. Mm-hmm. Dave Richard is coming out Friday to get a couple of more questions. They're having the walkthrough next week. Mm. And so one of the things that I'm glad you brought that up is we had talked about moving the improvements committee from the 1st to the 8th.
Yeah, that's good.
So that way we have time to, because they were going to have the bids in by the 3rd. And then that would give us time to look at those so that they can go to the improvements committee on the 8th.
Oh, next month.
Next month of October.
So still within our timeline. But
we're still within our timeline. And then once a bid comes through that we accept, then the plan was to take it to the October board meeting for approval so that we can move forward.
When are bids coming due? What's the date?
October 3rd is what we had discussed.
Okay.
Staff, anything further?
Nothing for me. Thank you.
Sorry to take so much of your time.
Good.
There's a lot going on.
Good report. My only comment is good catch on that
agreement, Amelia. I don't know how you did that or where you found it.
I just hang out on the website all the time. I mosey there. I'm looking for other stuff, and then it's like, oh, they're talking about Basin 5. Oh, they're talking, yeah, and so it's just all serendipity.
Yeah. No, I thought there was some kind of sorcery involved, but what do I know? We're adjourned. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.